This episode of Anarchy Gumbo Podcast was pre-recorded on June 27th.
Welcome to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Michael W. Dean of the Freedom Fiends cooks up a very special blend of liberty, guns, sex, rock and roll, drugs, and thriving in spite of the state in an increasingly worrying world. All with a rotating cast of nifty guests who are also up in the middle of the night.
This is Michael W. Dean. We have another wonderful episode of the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast today. Our guest is Nikki Darling. Hi, Nikki.
Hey, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm nifty. So does that name come from the Prince song?
Yes, it does.
Filthy, filthy, filthy girl. That is a filthy song, man.
I love it.
Yeah. Well, we usually talk about sex in the third part of the podcast, so let's talk about something else first. So who are you and what do you do and where do you live and what's your life about? And your activism. Mm.
Well, I'm
that's
not,
the first that'll take the first 20 minutes, so go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'm not really anybody, I guess you could say.
On the Anarchy Gumbo because a lot of what I do is interview interesting people who don't get interviewed a lot because you know, in the Liberty podcast and radio and media movement, it tends to be insular and the same people. It's like, you know, I love Pete Ayer, but I've heard about 40 interviews with him, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And the same thing with Stefan Molyneux and the same thing with Stephanie Murphy. And, you know, it's like, I want to hear people that don't do a lot of interviews. So that's why you're on, because you're cool and smart.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yep.
Well, I live a few miles north of DC in Maryland, unfortunately.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it really sucks. I was living in Utah for about 8 months and I had to move back here for my job. Currently I consider myself a jack of all trades. I was doing some catering for a terrible, terrible woman. So I had to quit. I do photography, graphic design, wedding photography, just anything that makes me money, reselling stuff on eBay, just about anything I can to pay my bills. I'm an agorist. So I also have a jewelry business, which I haven't been selling too much lately just because I've been so busy with other things. But it's on Etsy. And
explain agorism. This podcast is kind of unique compared to a lot of Liberty casts because about a third of our listeners are new to all the concepts.
Ah, okay. Well, agorism, I've always been an agorist. But agorism to me is just not asking permission from government to do what you want to do, not paying taxes, you know, just not being under the government's radar when you do your work. And I really enjoy doing that.
I have a question. I have a lot of people come on this cast who say that that's what they are and that's what it means. Do you feel like you're in danger of putting yourself in the government's sights by saying those things in public on a podcast?
No.
Why?
I really don't think I make enough for them to even really care unless they were looking to make an example out of me for some reason. I don't think that they would waste their time.
And it seems to me lately that the people who get busted who are in the Liberty movement, you know, like Stacey Litz, who's evil, and like Jillian, who's angelic, they weren't targeted because they were Liberty people. They were just happened to get caught doing something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I know some people will bitch and say you shouldn't use fake names and stuff like that, but that's why I do it. I just would like to stay under the radar.
Yeah. Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So my activism, well, that's mainly a big part of it. I'm not a very confrontational person. I guess maybe I'm getting better at it, but I like to support the activists as much as I can. Like right now, I'm going to make a poster for Eddie Free's Asbury Park protest. I don't know if you heard about what's going on up there.
No, what's going on up there?
The mayor says now, I guess it's some sort of 40-year-old rule that they're now going to start instituting, that people aren't allowed to wear bathing suits on the boardwalk. You have to be fully clothed.
Man, Bruce Springsteen must be rolling over in his grave. Oh wait, he's still alive, isn't he?
Unfortunately.
I mean, that was his whole thing, was his first couple albums were like about the joys of running around Asbury Park in bathing suits.
Yeah, exactly. And so they're going to go up there all in bathing suits. And someone made a really cool suggestion. It was Jason Talley made a really cool suggestion that they kind of do like a runway fashion show of all the people who want in bathing suits. Yeah, so I think that's really great. So I'll probably go up there and do it too if I can. But I really, really don't want to get arrested. I just had a charge expunged from my record.
For what?
Ooh, this is a really crazy story, but I'll just give you the short version of it. I was working at a restaurant. First week on the job, I went to the back to get my order. My boss was in a hurry. He asked me to take out an order for him and take it over to a table. So I took out both orders, and when I went to the other table, I put it down. It was a glass of wine. Right as I put it on the table, the cops came in and arrested me.
For what?
She was 19, and it was a setup. It was a sting operation.
Ugh. How'd you get it expunged, and how much did that cost you?
It didn't actually cost that much, about $500, and then I had to pay the lawyer. I did 48 hours of community service next to actual criminals, and finally just appealed to have it expunged.
I'm glad that you got an attorney. I'm kind of dismayed with the amount of liberty activists who believe that they are attorneys and can represent themselves. And it doesn't always end well. And then people seem surprised because they don't understand the complexity of the law. I mean, I was talking to an attorney today who's a practicing attorney who is an anarchist also. And he literally said, you know, I'm all for people. If they're willing to go to jail, I'm all for people, you know, fighting the man. But even if you're going to represent yourself in court, you should consult with an attorney first and possibly have one in court with you in case you need a backup. I mean, just there's so much arcane minutia to how even to proceed in presenting a sentence in court that if you go in and just start yakking and you think that since you have the truth on your side, you're going to prevail. You know, there's a lot of people in jail, sitting in jail, wondering what happened, who did that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that end, but also it almost seems like having a lawyer can be arbitrary because it's like saying just because that person has that title of a lawyer that you automatically are going to get more points in the judge's eyes. When I've seen people like Ademo, for instance, he did defend himself during – it was like for that Greenfeld over the stopping of his RV. And, I mean, he seemed very knowledgeable of the law, and I think it just has to do with having the title pretty much as an attorney.
Well – I mean, and some could say, well, yeah, of course a lawyer told you should have a lawyer there. That's like asking the barber if you need a haircut. But this guy is not in it for that. And, you know, he can't practice in the jurisdiction that I was asking him about. And, you know, he literally does not think lawyers should need to be licensed. He said to me, you know, a lot of paralegals could practice law better than lawyers, and they could do it a lot more cheaply if they were allowed to because they don't have – you know, the student debts and the price of running an office and all that. But, you know, so he's a good guy lawyer. And he said, you know, I mean, he said, if I were arrested, I'd hire a lawyer. I wouldn't even represent myself. That's, you know, it's just, it's common sense. But there's a lot of in the liberty movement, just like opposition to hiring a lawyer. And I think it's putting a lot of people in harm's way that don't need to. And another thing that a practicing attorney has, other than the license, which impresses the judge, is a practicing attorney has spent years in court. So they
That's
know.
True.
And a lot of the value of a lawyer comes from experience, not just from book learning, you know?
Yeah. Well, it also depends on the charge, because with my case, my lawyer is actually just a family friend, and he's actually a civil lawyer, not a criminal lawyer. And the whole process of this just took 5 minutes, literally, and all my lawyer did was go in and accept this plea agreement to do the community service. What they really wanted was my boss, but they didn't give him a misdemeanor, but he paid $2,500 to the state of Maryland.
That's what they wanted. Yeah,
that's what they wanted. So, and I had no previous record. So.
I think a lot of whether or not it's prudent for people to represent themselves and challenge the man also depends on, you know, whether they've got kids to support, you know, whether it's in their own state, whether the severity of it too. I mean, I think It makes a lot of sense for Ademo to stand up and challenge a, you know, traffic violation in his hometown where he's got hundreds of activists. I don't think it would make sense for someone to, you know, challenge a felony drug possession representing yourself in another state if you had kids, you know?
Of course not. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but in, F the man. F the man.
Yeah, but apparently in New Hampshire, I guess it's different up there. You don't need, technically, you don't need a lawyer. You can have somebody represent you that's not a lawyer, because I believe Bradley Jardis has been representing people now.
Can they charge money for that legally?
That I'm not sure of. I just know that Jake, remember the case with Jason Talley where he was tackled in the lobby of the courthouse just for filming? I believe, yeah. Jason Talley represented him.
Yeah, I've seen the video. Yep.
Yes. Or Bradley Jardis, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of going off on a side issue here, but I just think that there's a lot of misinformation in the liberty movement. It's a lot of it is kind of spillover from the sovereign citizen movement, which is, you know, I'm 100% behind that. Like, you know, judges don't have the right to do that. But when people say and charge money for books saying that, you know, if you use these magic words in court, the United States federal corporation has no hold on you. I'm like, that's bullshit. And you'll end up in prison. It doesn't work, yes. Man. It doesn't work. The only magic words, there's two magic words, and they're with cops, not with lawyers. They are, I don't consent to be searched. And yeah. Am I free to leave? And yeah. I want an attorney if they capture you. Those are the only magic words. You know, you can't put your name in all capital letters and think it's going to keep the bad guys from effing with you, you know, fucking with you.
Yeah, definitely true with that. But with my case, I probably could have won it because there was no exchange of money and the charge was actually sale of alcohol to a minor and she didn't even touch the alcohol.
Now, so was she actually a minor or was she an undercover pretending to be a minor?
Was 19. And what I think it was is that she got busted drinking and they said, hey, you want to come help us and we'll, you know, get rid of your charges if you come work for us as an informant. Or, I mean, not an informant, but as a pawn or whatever, you know, they set her up, you know.
Was she hot?
No, actually. I mean, she was average.
I'm just being a prick, man.
Yeah, but she had on a wedding ring. It looked like a wedding ring, and she looked very old. But, again, I'd assume my boss had carded her, so.
You know, interestingly, in some states, I believe Virginia used to be like this, and I think West Virginia may still be like this. A minor can drink in a bar with their adult spouse. And I've heard that actually, like, you know, 14-year-old alcoholic girls to get away from their abusive father used to marry, you know, 21-year-olds so they could go drink in a bar.
That's great. Well, in Virginia, it wouldn't surprise me in some parts.
Yeah. I lived in Chevy Chase, Maryland for part of the summer, and I lived in Arlington, Virginia, and Charlottesville, Virginia for a few years, and D.C. for a year.
Oh, okay.
I know the area.
Yeah, it's good you're not here. This place kind of sucks.
Yeah, Maryland's got really bad. You know, I always hear people saying California has the most horrible draconian gun laws in America. And I'm like, you know, actually, I lived in California and I know people in Maryland. It's easier to own a gun in California than in Maryland.
That's what I've heard also. Yeah, that's why I haven't even bothered trying.
Yeah. Yep. What do you think about guns?
I like them.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I've gone shooting a lot with family members, and currently I'm applying for a job with Ruger.
In New Hampshire?
Yeah. Hopefully. You know, Daryl Perry works for them, and so he'll probably be able to put in a good word for me.
I have a Ruger revolver, and it says New Hampshire on the barrel.
That's pretty sweet.
Yep.
Yeah. I like American-made gun companies.
I don't really care either way. I was talking about that with my wife the other day. Of like, she was like, well, you know, this is a good place because it's shopping local. And I'm like, I don't buy that anymore. In today's international economy, first of all, anything you're buying local is largely made with Chinese parts in most cases. Second of all, it's going to be cheaper if it's not local often. Third of all, you're still supporting local merchants by buying something local that's made somewhere else. And, you know, even if you're not, I don't know. I also really, that's an argument that can go both ways. I'm a lot stronger on this argument. I am not nationalistic about guns. I have guns. I own guns that are made in, you know, I have a couple Russian guns. I have a Croatian guns, you know, from a country that doesn't even exist anymore. Serbo-Croatia.
Wow.
Yugoslavia. I have a Yugoslavian gun. That country does not exist anymore. Mm. Let's see what else. Used to have a Croatian gun that was really nice, handgun actually. But yeah, and I don't know. There's good guns from all over the world.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm nationalistic about it. I just, you know.
I wasn't saying you were.
Ruger makes great guns, so.
Yeah. I used to not like Ruger because under the previous Ruger ownership, and they don't own it anymore, but they put in 10-round mags before Congress required it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just being statist. And also they stopped advertising with Free Talk Live because Free Talk Live talked ill of the war.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Hmm. Yeah, I was wondering where their commercials went.
Yep. I mean, I'm not saying don't work there because of that. A job's a job.
No, of course not, yeah.
But they also do a lot of arming of police, but, you know, who doesn't? It's a gun company. There's one gun company I know of that has taken a stand on that. I forget who it is, but it's some 50 cal gun manufacturer who quit selling guns to police agencies in California when California outlawed 50 cal guns.
Oh, okay.
And he also won't service guns. You know, like there's a year warranty on his guns, and after the year warranty, he'll still do service on them for pay. He will not service guns from police agencies in California. He previously sold them even for pay.
Oh, good. Well, that's excellent. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's funny you say that about the commercials being pulled from Free Talk Live, because just as on Sunday night, I was at the CAC in New Hampshire, and just as I'm leaving, I'm saying goodbye to Ian, and I'm saying, maybe I'll move back up here, because I think I might try to get a job at Ruger. And he was like, oh, okay.
Did he say it like, okay?
No, he didn't say it. He's the nicest guy ever.
He really is. I talked to him a few minutes before this cast on the phone.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. He's I like his LRN thing, which is what syndicates the podcast we're doing right now. It's pretty cool.
Oh, of course.
Pretty cool system. I leave it. I bookmarked the streaming link and I keep it on the background. I say it's like NPR for anarchists.
Yeah.
Because you know, it's really well produced. It's really varied. It's 24/7 and it's all kind of got a similar political message, and people leave it on in the background while they're working. And that's all things that are true of NPR, but in a different direction politically.
Yep. Yep. I have LRN on all the time. And ever since I found LRN, I rarely watch TV anymore.
Yep. If someone is hearing this podcast through something other than LRN, that's the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.fm. And while we're pimping products and services here, you said you had right before the cast, you said, I got to run away because I got to go get a battery for my e-cigarette. And I've got one in my hand, too.
Yes. Yes. I've been vaping for almost 2 years now. And it's just fantastic.
Have you quit tobacco?
Well, mostly. I did have a few cigarettes yesterday, but that's because my e-cigarette wasn't working very well. I had to fix it.
Yeah. The only time I smoke now is like, you know, 1 or 2 days every few months if I get my order in late and am waiting on my cartomizers, because I am very, very addicted to nicotine. I smoked 3 packs a day for like 20 years. And
wow.
I feel much healthier with e-cigs.
Yeah, so do I. I started jogging and I don't have the breathing problems that I used to have. So
what brand do you use?
Oh, the e-cigarette. Well, I'm sure everybody knows about the Ego by Joytech. And that's what I started on, but I've kind of moved up into the professional modding world of e-cigarettes. I have an Omega by Alt Smoke, which looks like a pink pipe bomb, and you unscrew it and you put this big ass battery in it that's rechargeable.
When you say modding, are you altering the electronics of the battery?
No, but they call them mods for some reason. I guess because they're handmade by people usually. Which now China's getting into the business of making them too, though.
I use Vaporsmiths. You ever try them?
Yes, and only because I've heard you guys talking about them. I just ordered a few bottles of juice from them, and I really enjoy them. But their pricing thing on their website, I don't really like very much.
What do you mean?
Well, it's kind of like it's a system to pick your own price, which price you feel you should pay for it. And while I advocate for something like that, I don't think it works with like uneducated people who don't understand like the free market, because people will just bottom out on the prices all the time. And I've read on some forums that the owner of Vaporsmith has gotten angry with people for bottoming out on the prices.
I didn't know that they were adding that functionality.
Oh, no, they have it. Yeah, I just bought I bought a tank from them a few weeks ago, and the bottom price was like $6 and the top price was like $24. And I went and looked at other pages to see what the going rate was, and that's what I did.
People can also use the coupon code freedomfiend.com. That's freedomfiend.com at Vaporsmiths to get a discount.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Huh. Well, I'll do that next time I order because it's really great juice.
It's not Freedom Fiends. It's Freedom Fiend, all one word. And they're an advertiser and sponsor of Freedom Fiends. I don't have any ads yet on Anarchy Gumbo other than ads for, you know, our own Guns and Weed movie. And it's not like I want this to be pure. It's more like, we only have about a quarter of the listeners of Freedom Fiend so far, so I don't feel right going and asking people to do ads. But we will eventually, probably. Yeah.
Well, right now I'm using this this little e-cigarette that hooks into my computer via USB.
I made a picture the other day that said it was based on some comment that Nima made on the cast of it's a picture of like, look, a screenshot of computer drives, like, you know, the C drive, the D drive, and then I added an E drive, which was a lung drive, which was a little picture, a little picture of two little pink lungs, and it said, Vaporsmith's USB pass-throughs, like downloading pure nicotine to your lung drive.
That's funny.
Yeah, because it's really, there's something very umbilical about plugging your nicotine delivery device into your computer while you're sitting at your computer for 12 hours.
Oh, yeah, but it's totally worth it.
Yep. And we're going to talk about computers in the second section coming up here.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast, a tasty stew of freedom and fun. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Tired of the false economy? Want to carry real money in a form that people will dig getting? Don't Tread on Meme now has Freedom Fiends and Guns and Weed silver dime cards. Collect all four. Trade them with your friends. Freedom Fiends silver dime cards are also great for starting conversations with statists about liberty. Go to freedomfiends.com today and click the link at the top that says silver dime cards. That's freedomfiends.com.
So tell me about Porkfest. First of all, what is Porkfest? It sounds like a meat contest.
Yeah, that's what my family thought. It's the Porcupine Freedom Festival in Lancaster, New Hampshire. And it's a festival, I guess, of bringing free, loving people together. It's also sponsored by the Free State Project.
So. Bringing free? That sounds like an orgy. Is it an orgy?
Well, you know, there might have been some orgies going on. I was not involved. But there was a lot of drunken nights staying up until the sun rose.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. Very cool.
How many people were there? It was more highly attended than each year it's had more people. How many did it have this year? Yeah.
I don't know the numbers didn't come out yet, but they're thinking, you know, close to 1,000, maybe a little over. But every time they do the group picture, I hear that by the time they take that picture, like half the people have already left by then. So
yeah, that's what Ben Stone said this year. This was his first one and he went to it and he said that was the case. And there were still just, you couldn't even get all the people into the picture almost.
Yeah.
Who takes the picture?
Well, this year it was a woman named Linda. She actually runs a Liberty printing and graphic design business. So, I forget her last name.
Why isn't the picture out yet? It's not like they have to develop it.
Well, no, it is out.
Oh, where is it?
Yeah.
Let me find it.
It's on my page.
All right. On your Facebook page?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Excellent. Okay. So, tell me more about Porkfest.
Ooh, okay. Well, speaking of Ben Stone, so I pull up to our site, and as we're getting out, I see an RV right across from us. and I noticed a man get out with a beard, and I said to myself, I think that's the bad Quaker. And I immediately just walked over because I'm feeling very social. And I said, are you the bad Quaker? And he said, why, yes, I am. And we just started talking. And I felt a little creepy doing that. But it was really nice to meet him. And I went over and listened to a few podcasts that he did. It was nice to have him across the way. And I met his – who is – is that his daughter? You interviewed as well,
or what? What were you gonna say? Or what?
Oh no, or his sister. I'm not.
It's his daughter. It's his daughter. Yeah, Kai's daughter. I thought you were gonna say her his girlfriend.
No, well, that could be too.
It could be too. Be nothing wrong with that. But yeah, she's about 26 and he's about 52. But yeah, that's his daughter. He has a bunch of kids. He's married, happily married, and I've chatted with his wife before, and chatted with Kai a bunch. I don't know any of his other children.
Yeah, so yeah, Kai is awesome. We were having trouble setting up a tent. One of the guys that rode up with us didn't really want to set up his own tent. And so me and my other friend were trying to set it up, and then two other people from another site came over. And we were so frustrated we couldn't set it up, and finally Kai came over and said, oh, let me help you. I've been living in tents for the past 6 months. And she was frustrated with the tent too, but it was a nice icebreaker.
So I'm looking at this picture now. Is it the one that says Word Association, Bacon, Freedom, and Swamp Ass is all I can think of right now?
Yes.
That's awesome. That is a lot of people, man.
Yeah, yeah.
What are all the people in the orange shirts over on the side? Are they a choir?
Actually, that group was kind of head up by Christopher Lawless, and the shirts all say NBC, which I believe stands for Not Batshit Crazy. Some sort of, are
they,
I don't
Ron, know. They Ron Paul people? He's Ron Paul's bodyguard, isn't he, Christopher Lawless?
No, is he? I thought that he happened to just be in a picture behind Ron Paul, and he looked like a giant, and that's why they call him Ron Paul's giant.
He traveled with Ron Paul, as far as I know. I saw him on Fox News and MSNBC when Ron Paul gave a speech after one of the primaries. Yeah, Chris was front and center, or like right behind him, like a bodyguard. I was assuming it was his bodyguard.
Oh, okay. Well, then you're probably
right. I don't know if I'm right. I'd like to think that, but I don't know.
I don't know.
But it's not just that he was in him with one picture. He did. I think he did travel with him and work with him.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
Might not have been bodyguard. Might have been webmaster. I don't know. But, he worked. I think he worked volunteering for him.
Oh, well, then that would make sense. Yeah.
How tall is that guy in person?
Huh. I don't know. 6'3", 6'4", maybe?
What? No, man. He's got to be like 6'9". Really?
He's huge. He's not that tall.
All right.
I mean, he's Jason Osborne's pretty tall, too, and he's just a little bit taller than him.
So what happened at Porkfest? Tell me some stories.
Oi, oi, oi. lots of sunburn and lots of drinking. Lots of staying up by the bonfire till the sun rose. But unfortunately, this year I heard that's because of we weren't allowed to sell alcohol, that it wasn't as vibrant as it was last year.
You weren't allowed to sell alcohol. Who says?
Actually, it was a request from the campground owner because they had, I guess the liquor board of New Hampshire had heard about it and they requested, you know, don't let anyone sell alcohol on the premises.
But people were allowed to bring their own alcohol.
Oh, of course. And I mean, there were a few people after hours that that put their own bottles out and said, hey, if you want to pay me for a cookie or something, I'll give you a shot of whiskey with it.
I like
and
it.
And the cookies would be like $10 or something. So.
Was there a lot of trading with silver?
Yes, and it was awesome. The Freedom's Phoenix people brought I guess they called that the money lift box, I bought a Freedom's Phoenix dime card.
Oh, they had them there? Good.
Well, I don't know if they didn't have them in the machine, but I told Drew Phillips that I wanted one, and he came over eventually and said he had one. And he asked me, he said, what would you pay for this card? And I said, I don't know, what's silver worth per troy ounce or whatever? And he said, no, has nothing to do with it. This has value to you because you like the show. What would you pay for? And I said, I don't know, like $10. And he goes, come on, that's way too much. I said, okay, $5 maybe. He said, okay. So that was pretty funny. And in the box they had, somebody made Firefly cards.
Cool.
Yeah. And they had, you know, every other show and stuff like that. I got change for a cup of coffee with Copper Rounds. And these Copper Rounds are just so awesome. I got one that, you know, had a picture of Mises on it. It was from, you know, Mises Institute. And they had, you know, Copper Rounds with all kinds of different Liberty-themed designs on them. They're really pretty. I didn't even want to spend them. I just wanted to bring them home and keep them.
I heard about Copper Rounds on Free Talk Live for the first time ever that I heard about it was this week, that they were being used at Porkfest. I never thought of copper as a precious enough metal to use in commerce, but it's used for like nickel and dime values, right? And quarters.
I believe these copper rounds were big enough. They were like worth a dollar.
How big were they?
Huge. Three times the size of a quarter, and they're really thick.
Like a small cookie?
Yes, exactly. And actually, one night during the campfire, somebody, I guess, didn't care for their copper round, and they threw it into the fire, and we had, like, these awesome green flames coming out of the fire.
Yeah, yeah. I know that copper is used for coloring fireworks. Like, copper burning and combined with other things creates greenish colors. And they use different metals. They use magnesium for blue or red. I forget what it is, but yeah, that's, I knew that. But I never thought that throwing one into a fire would make for a light show. That's cool.
Yeah, it was really neat. And then they had physical Bitcoins there too.
What's that? I know. Well, explain what a Bitcoin is. Not everybody knows who's listening.
Well, a Bitcoin, it's a non-centralized form of currency. It's like peer-to-peer. And you have like a Bitcoin wallet online. I honestly feel like a dope. I haven't gotten into it yet, but I plan on it. But these physical Bitcoins, actually Angel Clark got one as a donation, and it has a hologram on it and a little sticker that you pull off when you're ready to input the serial number into your Bitcoin account. And once you do that, then the physical Bitcoin isn't worth anything.
Interesting. I like it.
Yeah. I liked it too. I have a ton of silver dime cards I brought home. I should send you one because Taryn Lupo, being the sweetest guy in the world, gave me like a whole stack of them.
Nice. I'd love that. That'd be great. Appreciate
it.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of people are making alternative currencies and doing advertising, kind of taking technologies that are generally associated with the state or with very large corporations and using them for good, not for evil. You know, not that corporations, not that large businesses are evil, but corporations are a government protected sort of monopoly in a way.
Yes.
There's what I've been experimenting with lately is using those new kind of weird barcodes that don't have bars on them.
You seen those? Those square codes.
Yeah. What are they called? Okay. I don't even know what they're called, but I'm making them.
I don't either. QR codes, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's it. And we've been making them for Freedom Fiends and for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom. I mean, you can embed text in them, and then people can read it on a cell phone. And then, you know, if there's a web link in there, it'll go right to the web link. So they're good for stickers and posters and web pages and stuff. We've been making those. They're pretty fun.
Yeah, but they're good for people who have smartphones. Unfortunately, I do not.
Yeah, I have a dumb phone.
Yeah. Yeah, I decided just after being with AT&T for years and just shelling out $95 a month, I said, I'm done with it. And I just, you know, just got a burner phone and told people to email me if they need to send me stuff.
What's a burner phone?
Oh, a burner phone is like, that's the term a drug dealer uses just for like one
disposable
of the phones you can buy. Yeah, you can buy at the gas station and just throw out.
Burner phone. That's funny. So tell me more about Porkfest. I'm looking at pictures. It looks a lot of fun. I really, you know, I've known about Free State Project for 4 or 5 years, and was actually a pledged member at one point, but ended up moving to Wyoming instead just because my wife liked the idea of Wyoming better, and I didn't really like the idea of being near Washington, D.C., and also I grew up out there, and the humidity just fucking kills me in the summer.
Oh, yeah. The first day I got there, which was Thursday, we drove all night, and I get there and it was just oppressively hot the whole day. So badly, I had to take two showers in one day.
Yeah. It was 95 degrees here in Wyoming today with 40 mile an hour winds, which is a bizarre combination that I've rarely experienced in my life.
So you had flaming tumbleweed flying around.
Yeah. I mean, but it's dry. It's dry as heat. It's not Arizona dry heat, but it's, you know, way lower humidity than anywhere on the East Coast or the South.
Yeah, yeah. When I was in Utah, if it was 90 degrees, I could still deal with the windows being open as long as I wasn't moving around too much.
Yep.
But there was Stephanie Murphy introduced me to like this group of people because she knew I was from the Maryland, D.C. area. And they were like older, maybe a little bit younger than my parents. And they said they were from Frederick and they have a book club. And I said, oh, what kind of book club? And they're like, well, we get together once a month and we talk about economics books. And I said, oh, so you guys just like pull from like the Mises Institute, book club sheet. And this one woman chimed in and she said, well, Deb here, and pointed to the woman right next to her. Well, this is Lou Rockwell's sister. And I said, oh, really? Okay, wow. Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And apparently she lives 20 minutes north from me and she's in this book club. So I told them I would come join their book club. I think it'd be pretty interesting.
Wow. Lou Rockwell's sister.
Yeah. Her name is Debbie.
How old is she? Approximately.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't ask her for her slave ID to see the date.
I mean, is she, you know, in the 60 range or in the 20 range?
Yeah. Okay. Probably in the 50, 60 range. Yeah.
Yep. I figured she would be. Wait, whose sister was this?
Lou Rockwell.
Okay. I was thinking you said it was Mises' sister. It'd have to be like granddaughter or something, but daughter. Yeah.
Yeah. Jay Noon, do you know who he is?
No.
Okay. Well, he's best known. He did a property tax protest up in Massachusetts where he did not pay his property taxes on his home for a very long time. And some of the keen activists would come down and kind of just hang out with him and stand in front of his house. And if, you know, the authorities came.
He's not the guy that had the shootout, was he?
No.
The couple that had the shootout a few years ago?
Yeah, no, not him. But he was there, and he's kind of like, I would consider him kind of like a Massachusetts redneck a little bit. And I hope he doesn't take offense to that if he hears this. But he had like his ATVs there. And so somebody that he knew was rolling around on his ATV, and they had this flag kind of like stuck to the wheel of it. And it was just like a blue flag, and I didn't know what it was. So I ran up and I put my foot on it and I said, just go ahead and move forward and we'll get this flag out of the tire. It looks like it's stuck. And the guy said, no, it's a UN flag. We're purposely dragging it under the ATV.
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt like it's such a boob.
Yeah. There was a freedom, event in Wyoming a few years ago that they have semi-regularly where, one year they had a blue helmet shoot, which was basically taking an army helmet and painting it blue and putting the UN logo on it and putting it on a dummy, you know, at 200 yards and having people take turns shooting at it. And they stopped doing it because it got some bad press. It basically PC people thought it meant you're going to shoot those people, which, you know, I've heard people say they would if there's a lot of theories about the UN. The theories actually started, and I don't like the UN at all. I've already got a town government, a county government, a state government, a federal government. I don't need a worldwide government on top of that. Mm. And, the UN's, I've read a lot of the UN's information. It's kind of interesting because a lot of stuff that used to be like secret and conspiratorial, evil organizations now put on their website in their mission statement. And if you read the UN's mission statements about various things, I mean, they do want to disarm people of private gun ownership. They do want to take over, you know, the national forest systems of all countries to protect the environment and ban people from going into them, except in extreme, you know, very limited circumstances. But one of the first organizations to out all that was the, John Birch Society back in the 40s or 50s, right after the UN came out, they were on a tear about that. And then it kind of seeped over into mainstream culture. The UN are bad people. And I, I would applaud anyone running over their flag. I wouldn't bother doing anything to any flag myself, but I'd clap and smile.
Yeah, exactly. I don't trust the UN either, especially after I forget what country it was. It was in one of those Eastern European countries where they just left all those people to die.
Well, an interesting thing about the UN is one of the things they do is disarm people in third world countries. I mean, you know, when you have actors advocating for, you know, the United States needs to do something about the poverty and tyranny in Sierra Leone, you know, or what's the other country that was real sexy a couple of years ago that Angelina Jolie was fighting for?
Darfur?
Yeah, Darfur.
Yeah.
You know, one of the reasons that people are, you know, shot and killed by roving Muslim militias in those countries is because the UN came in and took away the weapons that, you know, the dirt farmers had.
Yeah, exactly. Gun control right there.
Yep. Yeah, so, I mean, I really think that some famous actor other than Angelina Jolie should, you know, have a telethon and a benefit to raise money to arm peasants in Darfur. That would go over so well in Hollywood, man. Guns for Darfur.
Yeah, exactly. They wouldn't be starving anymore because they could actually get their food back.
Well, that was a lot of it, too, was, you know, they didn't just have them for self-defense. They had them for, you know, shooting antelopes in a place where that's the only food and you can't really grow much.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, they have ways of killing those animals before. They had guns, so.
It's a lot harder with traps, man. Guns make it a lot easier to get an animal onto your dinner plate than spears or what. I saw this amazing thing on Animal Planet or, you know, National Geographic or something. It was three guys in Africa. I forget what country it was, but they basically waited until a lion killed a gazelle or something, and then they ran up to the lion and scared it away and and chopped some chunks off of the kill with machetes and then ran away with it. I'm like, that is the ballsiest thing I've ever seen video of in my fucking life.
That is, yeah.
And this is like how these people eat. You know, and some would say, oh, that's stealing. And I'm like, I don't think so, man. If you're starving, it's the law of the jungle and you don't even take the whole thing. You just take a leg off of it and then let the lion eat the rest. It was awesome.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've heard that, you know, some libertarians don't believe animals deserve rights anyway. So, you know, it's not stealing, I guess.
I know a libertarian who has an interesting take on it. It's a guy named Paul Bonneau who says that there's no such thing as rights. There's no such thing as natural rights. And the only rights you have are what you can ethically fight to keep.
I guess I would agree with that. Yeah, because rights, that word right there means that somebody else has given you the privilege to do something.
Or that someone will enforce it. I mean, it basically rights involves a mediating body to protect them and take them away.
Yeah.
It's not a very common opinion, Paul Bonneau's opinion, but it's amazing, and I'd like to spread it more.
Yeah, I'm going to write his name down so I can look him up. That's really cool.
I'll send you a link to his stuff. He's my friend on Facebook and my friend in person. He lives in Wyoming, and he writes for Strike the Root, that website.
Oh, okay.
The frequent contributor.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, another thing that happened at Porkfest, one of the vendors, I think I wrote this on your page earlier, there was this group of very rowdy, like, crust punks. Shush, Louie. Sorry, my dog's barking. And they had set up a site called Our Food, Your Gullet. And their food was great, but I guess midweek they were playing their music way too loud into the night, and some nanny person complained and printed out these little slips of paper that said boycott the gullet and just passed them around to everybody. So what these guys did, they went around and they grabbed them all before people were able to get to them, and they wrote on them, bring this coupon in for
That's awesome. Where did that is great. Where did the crust punks come from? That's pretty interesting.
Well, apparently, someone told me that these guys aren't even part of the Liberty Movement, that they just rove around to festivals and sell food. Yeah. So, but I mean, whatever, we're welcoming, and they had good food and they had great music, but like one day they started playing polka music and then Zydeco music. And we were like, what the hell? And I mean, we were all dancing and it was fun. So
I've only encountered crust punks, which for people who don't know, it's people who basically, I would say consider it a political statement to very infrequently bathe and are often homeless or, roaming. And, you know, they're punk rockers that like, they're so, it's been so long since they've washed their clothes and there's so much crust on them that basically they've ceased to smell because nothing can grow on them anymore. I've encountered them in Europe a lot. I toured with a movie there and toured leftist anarchist squats showing a documentary I made. And I've encountered them in Minneapolis and in San Francisco and nowhere else. I didn't know that species was viable on the East Coast. Maybe New York City squats, but other than that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the guys, a friend of mine had talked to him, and he's just been traveling around with these guys and doing lots of drugs and doesn't have a home and just hanging out. And I was like, okay, word.
Word. Yeah. Yep. Nice.
Whatever. I mean, this event was very diverse. There was children, families. I mean, very normal looking people who are like my parents' age. You know, crust punks, hippies, all, I mean, any sort of stereotypical name you could think of, those kind of people were there. And we all got along. It was beautiful.
I saw a great quote from the comedian Doug Stanhope. Do you know him?
Oh, I love him.
I love him too. He said, "The Free State Project stands out as one of the few ideas that could produce tangible change in our lifetime. The vision of Christian gun enthusiasts buying hand-painted targets from pot-smoking artists, laughing together while they give the tax man the finger, is beautiful enough to make the move."
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly how it is.
Were there any fights or conflicts?
No, actually, but you did hear that they banned three people.
Three people?
Yes.
Who? Why?
Am I allowed to say their names?
Well, banned before the show. I know one person who was a mover and shaker in making it happen last year was banned this year for some reason.
Yes. Yeah, that guy. Can I say his name?
I don't care.
What is he going to do?
Put it this way. He's complained about it at length on his Facebook page. So yes, you're not outing him secretly.
Yeah. And I'm not making any judgments just because I don't know him personally. But yes, Sovereign Curtis.
Why was he banned?
Well, apparently he wanted a little bit of power this year, even though the power was taken away from him. So he was in charge of running the roast. And so he was going to set up all this, you know, audio video equipment. But then somehow he came out on Facebook and said, you know, if anyone else tries to videotape, I'm going to sue you. Like,
yeah.
Bringing up IP laws.
And people were calling him Statist Curtis because of that, I guess.
Yeah, Chris Lawless made a funny joke during his roast that, hey, everybody, the moniker Sovereign is free if anybody would like to use it as their name now on Facebook.
Well, other people use it anyway on Facebook. But
exactly.
Okay, yeah, I used to have mixed feelings about IP because I literally make a living. I'm an author and a filmmaker, and I literally make a living from royalty checks that I get from books and DVD. And I had a kind of half measure libertarian, kind of Creative Commons view about it of, well, if people say it's okay and, for years, and I've recently come to the opinion of, nope, everything's up for grabs. There's no intellectual property rights because you're not when you copy someone's book, they still have the book.
Yeah.
And there are libertarians, you know, L. Neil Smith and Jay Shulman, I think is his name, who both have been really adamant about it. And the part of what turned me the final way from, you know, copyright minarchist to copyright anarchist was watching those cats, watching how square they looked trying to defend their points of view. Man, I was just like, yeah, you sound like an old guy. I'm the same age as you, but you sound old, man.
Yeah, it's funny. My dad works at the USPTO.
Patent and Trademark Office. Yeah. I've dealt with him. I actually filed a patent one time, but it's expired and I would never do it now.
You're listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. That proves you're smarter than most people.
Yeah. Well, my dad works at the Patent and Trademark Office, but he has nothing really to do with it. He's just a project manager, and he is in charge of their telework program. So it was funny. Like, one day I was talking to him, and he said, yeah, I was on the tail of one of our employees who wasn't supposed to leave the country. And it turns out he's got his work computer in Thailand right now. I was like,
and that was a problem, or?
Well, yeah, he's not supposed to take the computer out of the country with all the confidential information on it.
Do they use encryption for things like that? I mean, I know they do for like military level things and contractors, but for something like the Patent and Trademark Office, which, you know, their whole thing is about protecting other people's secrets. You'd think they would, but do they?
Yeah. Every person that teleworks for them, which now they've given people the option of teleworking 2 days a week. Everybody has it's the encrypted little password keychain that changes a code every hour that you have to put in.
Yeah.
And it's like that with every government agency, because when I worked for the Navy, we were not even allowed to put anything on a thumb drive and remove it from the office.
Which I want to talk to you about. That was actually how you and I first started chatting at length, was about the computers that government employees get compared to ones that people have to buy with real non-stolen money. I made that movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, which is a 99-minute high-def movie, and I made it on a computer that had 4 gigs of RAM, and it was like fucking watching paint dry. I mean, it took me like 4 days to output the final thing, and it really took 2 weeks because it crashed a few times and I had to restart it. Wow. And I just bought this computer with a faster processor that has 16 gigs of RAM, and I'm like, I just output my next movie, which is a 99-minute high-def gun training video, and it took me about 8 hours, and it did not crash. I was just like, this is how it should be. And when I was working with the 4 gigs of RAM, I was just cursing, like, you know, fucking the government. People just, they have these computers that are so great. And actually, the movie before that, I was in L.A., and I was like, before I had my spiritual awakening of libertarianism, I was like cursing Hollywood. Like, you know, I'd see these horrible trailers for these horrible Hollywood movies, and I'm like, I'll bet they're not having to sell blood to pay for the onlining of their movie, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yep. So talk about what kind of computers you had working for the Navy. Where else did you work too for the government?
I always feel bad telling people this, but I started after college. Actually, I interned there too during college.
Well, hey, this was before you were a libertarian, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Don't feel bad about it. It's like, I once was blind and now I see. I mean, that's the best story in the world. Everything on Oprah is like someone who used to be a crack whore and now they're like a school teacher. You know, I mean, it's all about redemption, man. As long as you make amends to the world by continuing, you know, not just in an Oprah sense, but in a life sense. I mean, I voted for Nancy Pelosi once. And, you know, part of what I'm doing is making amends for that now by everything I do, by not voting and thinking she's a dumb head.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of consider myself more of an anarchist now. You're right about the whole 6 month thing, because 6 months ago I was in Ron Paul's office getting a picture taken with him and, you know, having him sign a book for me. And now it's 6 months later. I'm completely an anarchist.
Yeah. It's a process, you know, and I'm really into Ron Paul as a philosopher, not as a politician, but I'm also really into him as a politician because, he creates anarchists. You know, he takes people from Fox News to anarchy. He's the missing link.
Yeah, exactly. I consider him the carrier of the message. He helps to spread it. That's all. But
and the day after he loses the election, we're gonna have a million new anarchists, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Back to, I guess, FDIC. I worked there. I mean, I guess I always have always been rebellious. I've always never really cared about the government that much. I've only voted once in my entire life because I just didn't really care. But I never had a passionate philosophy about life until I stopped working for the government. But I mainly just did graphic design and photography. I don't consider myself a real bureaucrat or anything. Actually, in my graphic design office, I had one guy that he started telling me about conspiracy theories about the Rothschilds and Bohemian Grove and all kinds of banking related conspiracies. And I thought that was weird that he still worked there.
Well, yeah, that's another thing. Alex Jones is brings a lot of people to anarchy, and he's a minarchist and a constitutionalist and a weirdo.
Yeah.
But a lot of people come in that way, that direction, that door too.
Well, that's how I came in, through Alex Jones via a boyfriend who forced me to listen to his podcast one night, and it scared the crap out of me. I mean, I woke up and I was like, let's hoard some guns and food and, you know, let's get ready. But I'm glad I found, like, I guess that from then on I went to Free Talk Live and then spread from there. So
where'd you spread from there, and how were they not the final chain?
Well, I spread from there to more LRN shows, and then I found, like, the Mises Institute with all their books, and then I, you know, found all the, like, on the reading list, Basquiat and Tom Woods, and just anything I can get my hands on, I try to read, even if I don't agree with it.
What are your favorite LRN shows?
I love your show, of course.
Which one?
Freedom Fiends.
Cool.
And Anarchy Gumbo. But I also love Pork Therapy.
Yeah, me too.
It's just a different spin on the whole Liberty thing. You're not hearing the same sort of stuff all the time. What else do I listen to?
I'm really intrigued because I, on this gun training with, I made a DVD recently that's coming out soon called Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle. And in the DVD extras, I made a little piece that had a lot of logos in it and music, and it was recommended media. And I'm so far you've named several of them. I'm wondering if we're dead on what I recommended on LRN of the 20 or so casts on there. Keep going.
Okay.
I'll tell you if you get them.
Well, I really loved Wheels Off Liberty when they had Jamie Crane. I don't think they're really doing many podcasts now.
I think did they stop? I heard one recently. I like that. I like they have a solid message, but they're kind of too like putting on the redneck patois for me. It's tired.
Jamie Crane is a redneck from Oklahoma.
Yeah, but well, anyway.
And he's funny. School Sucks podcast is great too.
Yeah, I
really enjoy that.
I like that one.
And I don't have like my podcast list open right now, but I use Stitcher Radio mainly like on an old iPhone that I have that isn't in service, and I just stick it into like my iPod dock when I'm going to bed, and I just play through all the shows. There's a whole bunch of stuff.
I like Bad Quaker.
Yes, I meant to mention that.
Sorry. The Disindoctrination podcast.
Yes.
Which is, you know, the Disindoctrination podcast, I call, you know, not really the Beavis and Butthead of Liberty, but it's more like the Wayne's World of Liberty, you know? I mean, I love them, and this is not a criticism. You know, there's people who say, like, Freedom Fiends, like, I can't listen to it because there's not enough solid information there, and it's just you guys, you know, joking half the time. And Disindoctrination podcast is even more so than that. I mean, it's really, dude, Liberty's cool. But I love that about it. Free Domain Radio, Stefan Molyneux, yeah. I love. Freedom's Phoenix, I like. Although the sound of Ernest's voice kind of grates on me, but I love him and what he says.
Well, Ernest just has energy. I don't know where he gets it from.
I know.
Yeah. But speaking of the Disindoctrination podcast, for the first time I met Garrett and his girlfriend, yeah, at Pork Fest, and it was like right as the sun was coming up, and they were both really, really intoxicated, and we just had the greatest time. They are both so hilarious, and so when the final group of people broke up from the campfire, we were just walking around, and Garrett's like, "Let's go troll some tents," and I was like, "What do you mean? How do you do that?" He's like, "We're just gonna go bang on people's tents and run away."
Garrett and Nima are both the same age, and they're both the same. They're both born the same year that my daughter, who passed away, was born. Mm. And I don't really consider them my sons. I consider them my little brothers, though. Those two, Nima and Garrett, are my little brothers. Aww. My little brothers in Liberty.
Oh, that's great. Yep. Yeah, they're really cool. So,
I like Pork Therapy and Sex, Lies, and Anarchy a lot too.
Yeah, I haven't listened to much of Sex, Lies, and Anarchy, but I am going to now because I met Antigone, and she's great. So
cool.
Yeah,
she's slated for an interview on here sometime the next month or so.
Yeah, she has a very sexy voice.
Yes.
But yeah, I also listen to The Flaming Freedom, too. I mean, I'm not homosexual, but I do enjoy the topics that they cover because they kind of take a liberty twist on the LGBT community.
I've got a pod beef going on with Dale. At least it might be one-sided. It's coming from me, but I've invited him to come on Anarchy Gumbo and have the pod beef with me.
Okay. pod beef over what?
His treatment of BDSM on the air. Basically saying that it's indicative of people who
have been abused.
Have been abused or have problems. Yeah. And I was not abused. Well, I was, but it's not his place to diagnose, and it's got nothing to do with it. You know, I showed signs of it before that. And it's a big light. Basically, my wife and I define ourselves as being in a BDSM relationship in a way that is as strong as most gay people define themselves as gay. That's the easiest way to say it. And, you know, if somebody bashed homosexuals, and I'm bisexual, so, you know, it's not a thing of, oh, that faggot, you know, it's like, I've sucked a lot of cock in my day. I haven't for a long time because I'm married, but, you know, if somebody talked about homosexuality the way that he talked about BDSM, everybody in the liberty movement would disown them and consider them a bigot. So, that's my beef with him, and I want to have him on and discuss it.
Yeah,
he's a great guy, and I love his comics, man. They were like an early influence for me on Liberty, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that would be a great discussion to have, and I kind of agree with you too. But I also think when it comes to porn, and you said we'd get into sex in the third part of the show.
We're here, baby. Go.
Yeah, I believe that porn sometimes does make you desensitized, and like in my case, I'm moving up the ladder to the harder and harder and harder, and it has nothing to do with my childhood, which, you know, there was no abuse in it. So just about a variety.
You mean you're moving towards like liking porn that's more hardcore in that it's blatant, or more in that it's like aggressive?
Aggressive and BDSM, you know?
Okay. Here's my thought about anything that's considered, you're talking about it like in the gateway drug model. You know, like it sounds like you're saying I tried one thing, I was desensitized to it, and I tried another thing. They say the same thing about weed to heroin. And I don't buy that model. And here's what I think. I think you probably wanted the hardcore stuff all along, didn't find it originally, and found something that was a half measure. And it opened up your reluctance. I mean, this is a possibility. It opened up your reluctance to porn. You know, if you'd seen the hardcore stuff first, you might have gone, oh, porn, that's bad. But, you know, it one thing led to another. Whereas I think, you know, I smoked pot before I smoked heroin. I've been I'm a recovering heroin addict, and I've been clean and sober since 1994, you know, not even a joint or a drink. And I smoked pot when I was 11, and I first stuck a needle in my arm when I was 21, and people would say, that's proof right there. But I also, you know, drank milk before I did heroin. Was that a gateway drug? And it's like, I mean, that sounds kind of like, you know, bullshit logic or something, but the real logic of it is my brain chemistry is such that narcotics are the only drug I really like. I've done every drug under the sun, and the only one I ever really loved was, you know, heroin, Vicodin, codeine, morphine, et cetera. It's where my brain wanted to be. But, you know, nobody in my tiny town in upstate New York when I was 11 years old would offer an 11-year-old heroin, and probably a good thing. But, you know, so I discovered pot first. I don't think pot was the gateway. I think it was just what you could find when you're 11, you know?
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree with you on that, too. And you're right. My means of finding certain videos has probably gotten better. And it's just only been recently where I've kind of stopped being so shy about admitting that I watch porn as a female, or actually being more confident enough to tell a man I'm with exactly what I want, even if it's kind of weird.
Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? And we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. When you're not busy spying on your neighbors or squinting at everyone, tell anyone who will listen why more government is a good thing. You'll get a warm and fuzzy feeling demanding more taxes and arguing in favor of gun control while militarizing our police, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
That is so square. Check out the additional Freedom Fiends show, Freedom Fiends Live, every Sunday on the LRN.fm streaming feed or satellite radio.
Broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker inside a mountain near an undisclosed location in the rural Wild West of the occupied states of America.
Freedom Fiends Live expands on the Fiends' weekly Wednesday podcasts, but now we're kicking the hornet's nest live. Talk back to the back talkers every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. East Coast time. From the makers of Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. Freedom Fiends Live. Call in soon before we get droned. So, yeah, that was one of the things. You know, I mean, I live in Wyoming, and I see ads here for, like, churches that offer kind of like 12-step groups that aren't really 12-step. They're Bible-based only, on like, you know, do you have a porn problem? Is it breaking up your marriage? And my wife and I laugh because it's like, you know, one of the things that I really liked about her when I met her was that, you know, her hard drive was also full of videos of, you know, three guys choke fucking a woman. I was like, cool, we can share this too.
Sorry to laugh. Your wife is so awesome.
She is. She is awesome.
So what kind of porn do you like?
Well,
my wife's are you laughing, baby? TJ's laughing her ass off in the other room.
So what kind of porn do you like, Nikki?
I wouldn't go as far as to say I like the
Say hi. Joke. Say okay. Hi, DJ.
Hi, DJ.
It's Nikki, but all right. Yeah. Just so you know that this is with the full consent and I'm not sneaking around talking to women on the internet and going, tell me what kind of porn you like, Nikki, behind my wife's back. She's like, this is boring. And then this part isn't. I'm going to laugh. All right. So yeah. Go on. What kind of porn do you like?
Well, I wouldn't go as far as to say I like anything choking. Nothing that's, I think, painful, like very painfully violent. Just,
but you know, I'm talking about consensual things too, right? It's not like I'm looking at porn of women being raped.
No, of course not. I mean, wouldn't that be like a snuff film or, well, that even that's like a set up. That's not real.
Well, I've never seen one, but apparently there is a lot of video in the world of people being killed, but most of it's war or accidental. Or, you know, there's so many cameras everywhere now that there's tons of pictures of people being like shot on the street or whatever. But, you know, so there is snuff footage out there in the world. But that's a hard limit for me. I don't dig that. I don't even.
Yeah.
I don't like anything where anyone's cut or hurt or there's blood.
Exactly. Yeah. Or even, I don't know, feces or urine.
Ugh. Ew. Ew.
But I mean, I've kind of made my way towards like woman on woman, too, which is interesting to me because I never thought that I'd be into that, but I am. So maybe I'm just evolving.
Well, the Christian church group around the corner to me would say, see, pornography causes lesbianism.
No, I think the Liberty Movement might actually.
The Liberty Movement causes lesbianism?
Well, not causes, but it might make people feel more comfortable about their lesbianism or whatever. So maybe I am bisexual and I just never really knew it.
It's all good, baby.
Yeah.
It's all good.
I haven't been very repressed or anything. I just I live in an area where people consider themselves to be very mainstream and normal. And it's just I've always felt like a square peg trying to fit in a circle hole. It just, you know, hasn't worked out.
I actually sent Dale's podcast to a couple of friends of mine from San Francisco who are, you know, gay and have been out for decades and, you know, are basically married as far as they can be wherever they live now, and who are statists, but people I really like from back in the day. I've sent a couple of them Dale's podcast to try to lure them into Liberty. I never heard back. I don't know if they listened to it.
Yeah, I suggested it to a few of my gay friends too, and I haven't heard either. So who knows? I think a lot of the people that I know around here that are not in part of the Liberty Movement, they care about me, they're my friends, but they're also behind my back, they're like, Nicole's a weirdo, what is up with her and her beliefs? And they just don't get it. And I tried to explain it to my parents even, and I've kind of got my mom figured out. And my mom, you know, she now, ever since I was arrested, she totally advocates for the no victim, no crime motto of things, but she's still gonna vote for Obama. So
let's talk about that for our closing comments. I've lost friends by becoming a libertarian, like lifelong friends. Have you experienced that at all?
Yes, I have. Definitely.
Talk about that a little bit. Give me some examples.
Well, I guess when I first found the whole Liberty Movement and stuff, I was really excited to spread the message and to learn more about it. So I would definitely do that via Facebook, especially. And sometimes when friends of mine would make comments that I felt warranted a alternative response besides the, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, buddy. I would feel perfectly fine doing that. And that's when people would get very angry at me and tell me that my opinion was not wanted.
When you said what? I missed that. My cat was yelling at me.
Oh, when I would reply with a response that was more liberty-oriented as opposed to what just boring people say, like, oh, sorry, how's the weather there, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So sometimes I feel like perhaps my philosophy is just kind of hard for some people to understand, while you and I, it makes perfect sense. And I've since just stopped with those.
Yeah, I've actually blocked a bunch of them, but a lot of them I just don't talk to anymore. But the ones that were aggressive verbally to me about it, I've blocked actual friends. You know, I think about liberty-oriented stuff so 24/7 that it's like hard for me to talk about it. It kind of reminds me of, you know, on The Simpsons when Homer opens his door and there's the pastor of the church and the whole church group. And Homer says, "Oh, I hope this isn't about Jesus." And the pastor says, "Homer, everything's about Jesus except this." And, you know, I kind of feel like everything's about liberty. I find the liberty angle in everything. And a lot of my friends in San Francisco, from when I used to live there for 16 years, you know, got sick of me on Facebook and elsewhere of every time they said something, you know, I would, without even thinking about it, just post some comment that pointed to the liberty problem of it. I mean, I have a friend, for instance, he was the guitar player in my old band, Bomb, and he is gay and manages two gay bars. And he's very, very Democrat, hates Republicans, loves Democrats, you know, was really happy when Obama ran. And the city council of San Francisco, who are all, you know, to the left of Nancy Pelosi somewhere, basically revoked his liquor, didn't renew his liquor license at this place that had been there for 30 years. That is a like important part of the gay community. Basically, Doug runs the two rock and roll gay bars. You know, all the other ones are discos and play dance music. And this one plays, you know, like hardcore fucking rape me over the pool table, rock and roll. And, you know, the city council was like, "No, we want to put a fern bar in there. You know, we're going to kick you guys out." And Doug was just like, you know, trying to raise money for a lawyer and being adamant and like, "I'm going to fight the system. And like, how can they do this to me?" And I'm like, "Because they're fucking politicians, man." Like, you know, and I was like, "Are you ready yet to talk to me about anarchy and libertarianism?" And he's like, "No, man."
Oh, man. It'll hit him one day, hopefully, you know?
Maybe.
I mean, it's people's experiences usually that bring them to this.
So tell me some more experiences you've had of friends disowning you or you disowning friends over liberty comments. With examples and illustrations and spelling counts.
Well, I definitely have gotten into many arguments with my family, friends on Facebook, but unfortunately, and I'll admit it, I'm a complete hermit where I live because of these ideas, it's kind of isolated me, because going out and hanging out with, I like to just call them status now, is very hard for me, because like you, I think about it 24 hours a day and it applies to everything in my life.
You know, status actually is anyone but an anarchist. I mean, we say it like it's a cuss word, but it's actually a socio-political, you know, valid word you see in a textbook. Ron Paul people are statists. Minarchists are statists. Anyone who's not an anarchist is a statist because they believe in some state.
Yeah, exactly. I remember last summer I sent my family, like my mom, my dad, my brother, I sent them the video link to Stephen Molyneux's The Non-Aggression Principle, which is pretty much the bane of my existence now. It's everything that I believe in. I think about it every time I do anything. And I really thought that this would be a way that my parents could understand me, because it is very simple to follow. I think Stefan Molyneux is really good about the way he puts things. And so my mom shot back an email and said, "I don't know what this was, but it just sounded like gobbledygook."
Well, that's one reason that when I interview people on Anarchy Gumbo specifically, when they use terms that anarchists use, like everyone knows what they mean, I say, "What is an agorist?" You know, for the listener who doesn't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good thing to do, because a lot of people have heard all these terms if they're within the movement, but they might not know fully what they are. It might be hearsay. And sometimes, you know, when you're playing the telephone game with people, things get misconstrued. But my brother and I argue all the time. My brother is a complete state-loving person. I have friends that are military, family members who are military too, and I've tried to slowly creep in and put in the ideas about, you know, non-aggression, and that doesn't work either. I actually had somebody on Facebook it was so mean to me the other day. I guess apparently there's a website up of people who want to ban people from talking badly about the military on Memorial Day. I guess there's a page on Facebook about, it's like anti-military, and you know, about anti-Memorial Day. I'm trying to think of the title, and that's why I'm mumbling. I'm sorry. But anyways, a group came out against them.
I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's basically, we like free speech, but, you know, only in certain places. It's basically putting free speech into a, you know, into a free speech zone of a day rather than location.
Yeah, exactly. And I said that point to this woman, and she said something snide about, well, you know, my son is out there every day fighting for your right to hate on liberty. And
that's so wrong. I mean, that may have been true at one point in some way, but now it's like my son is there. You know, my stepson, who is like a son to me, is in the army, which is a mind fuck to me. Because I still love the guy, but I think it's just a bad idea for a lot of reasons. But, you know, people aren't over there fighting for our freedoms. They're over there working for Halliburton, basically.
Exactly. And that's what I told her. You know, it's big business, big corporation, big government.
Which sounds like hippie talk to those people. And some of those sites, there's a site I've seen for military families and friends that's called, you know, it's something like, we'll fight for your freedom regardless of what an idiot you are. It's something like that. And there's a lot of real haters on there. And they use the term hippie for anybody who doesn't agree with them. Hippie.
Yeah. Yeah. We're peace-loving, like, voluntarists, and we're hippies. Okay.
We're hippies with guns. I'm a hippie with a gun, basically.
Yeah. Sure. I'm a hippie, too, then. That's fine. You know, I shower every day, though. So, yeah. But, yeah. You know, with family, it's just, I don't even bother anymore. My dad and I, my dad loves to talk politics with me whenever we have dinner together. But, you know, he wants marijuana to be legal. He understands how it's needed for medicinal reasons. And he also likes to smoke it. So he wants that legalized. But there are other things he doesn't want legalized. And it's just like, you can't have a pick and choose sort of force government, you know, with people. I don't agree with that. And I tried to explain property taxes to him, and he didn't get it. And I said, you literally have to lower yourself kind of down with the words you use, because I found that the liberty movement, they tend to use words that are scary, like cage and kidnapped, you know, yeah. And those kind of words. And you can't just use those with everyday people. So I said to my dad, I said, you know, when you're done paying off the mortgage on your home, will you have to ever pay another bill? And he said, well, sure I will. I have to pay my property taxes. And I said, well, how do you feel about that? And he said, well, I don't mind. I'm paying for these children's future, and hopefully they'll do something good with the world. And then I said, well, what would happen if you didn't pay your property taxes? And he said, I don't know. I would just keep getting bills in the mail. And I said, yeah, eventually, Dad, you'd get put in jail. And he said, well, you make a good point there.
No, you wouldn't get put in jail. They'd take your house. They usually don't jail you for that. They take your house.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I meant that. I said that to him also, and I thought it was jail, too, for some reason.
Well, probably if you get sassy and, you know, yell at an authority figure.
Yeah, actually, my dad would never do that. So, yeah, they would take his house.
If you just don't pay it, they just take your house.
Yeah. The point is that I was trying to tell him, though, is that you're just renting the land. You don't own it. And he finally got that. And it took a long time to hammer into him.
My dad's 91 and he's voted Republican his whole life, but he really loved FDR. He's an FDR Republican, if there's such a thing. And he still thinks pot should be illegal. I actually got him voting for Ron Paul, which is as far as I'm going to ever be able to get with him, because I try to have conversations with him and he just starts talking about, yeah, but the Muslims want to come over here and kill us and Sarah Palin's going to save us from them. And I'm just like, ugh, I got to go, Dad.
The warmongering, that just, it gets to me over.
Yeah, really, he actually signed up for World War II, didn't get to go. They wouldn't take him because he was a farmer. You know, the state was like, oh, we need you producing milk for our farm, for our soldiers, so you're more useful there. And he feels, I wouldn't say shame that he didn't serve, but really wishes he'd gotten to fight in World War II, which, you know, I may have never been born if that had happened. So,
yeah, but those were declared wars. So, I mean, technically, if the constitutional people will tell you, like, those were okay wars to fight, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's amazing to me how those people don't see the difference. I mean, there's so many people who are adamant constitution humpers that are into the Patriot Act, although there are a lot that aren't. There are a lot who are like, the Constitution's been subverted. But yeah, man, I don't get how they can back what's going on over there other than, you know, really, it's like the Muslims have become the what the commies were in the Cold War when I was growing up.
Yeah. I am really glad that I never joined the military like I had planned to after high school, because I hated high school. I would skip classes just to go down to the dark room and, you know, do photography, because that's what I do now. I just barely graduated, and at my graduation, I graduated at DAR, Constitution Hall downtown in D.C., and I remember leaving the ceremony and just not talking. I didn't dress up or anything, and I ran across the street, sat on a bench, and smoked a cigarette. My mom came over, and she said, "What do you want to do with your life? Now's the time to figure it out." And I said, "I really don't know." And my mom said, "Well, you can go join the Navy like your dad wants you to, or," and she pointed up at the building I was sitting in front of, and she said, "Or you can go to art school maybe." And I was actually sitting on the bench of the Corcoran College of Art and Design, which is where I ended up going to school. I protested in high school. I did not want to take my SATs. I thought they were a waste of time, that it was a very you can't judge people by one test. It's a one-size-fits-all solution, and I didn't think it was right, so I didn't take it. Yeah. So I got into art school without even taking the SATs, just based on my portfolio, and didn't join the military, thankfully, because the first year I was in college was when 9/11 happened, so I probably would have been sent off to some base, or not base, some aircraft carrier.
You would have been getting shot at.
Probably not, just because I'm a woman in the Navy, usually... doesn't put the women up on the front lines, which that kind of irritates me too, because, you know, why not? But, you know, but I just, yeah.
Yep. Well, cool, man. I've had a great time chatting with you. Do you have any closing comments?
No, I don't. No. I'm very tired, kind of.
All right. Well, cool. Thanks for coming on. And worms.
Yeah, worms. Thanks. Have a good night.
Yep.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Thank you for listening to the Anarchy Gumbo Podcast. Subscribe at kittyfeet.com. That's kittyfeet.com. All with a rotating guest on a spit, barbecued for your pleasure.
Outtakes, yay.